Worshiping God is a special time. It is a special activity. God has sanctified worship in order that we might glorify Him in His own uniquely appointed way. When we come together to worship God, we're to have a special attitude. We're to have a certain frame of mind. The Bible says God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be had in reverence of all them that are about Him. Psalm 89, verse 7. And not only is our attitude to be different when we worship God, but the acts or the activities that we engage in are to be different. And they are to be the ones that God authorizes, the ones that God has set aside for us to use as we approach Him in our worship. Now, throughout the Bible, God has shown that you can't just say that just because something is right in ordinary life, you can take it and make it a part of worship. There have been many people to make that mistake. Cain thought that just because he raised these crops, that he could offer them to God as a sacrifice. And God was not pleased. God did not accept his offering. Even though there was nothing wrong in and of itself with growing those crops and giving them to somebody else, God did not authorize him to give those crops in worship. Nadab and Abihu could burn different kinds of incense in their ordinary life. They could start different kinds of fires at home and in other places as long as they were not trying to worship God with them. But when they offered strange fire to God as a part of their worship, the Bible says they were killed. God struck them dead because they did something that God did not authorize. So it is a serious thing. And many people today have the idea that just because you can do something in ordinary life, you can do it in worship, and the Bible shows that is not true. Now, what we're looking at right now is 1 Corinthians chapter 14, and we're looking at questions that especially pertain to what has come to be called contemporary worship. And I'm looking at the idea not only that just because you can do it in ordinary life means you can do it in worship, but also the idea that when we come together to worship God, that there can be what I would describe as pandemonium. That you can holler and scream and yell and shout, and God is going to be pleased with that kind of activity. That there can be absolute chaos in a situation like that, and God is going to be pleased with that as an offering to Him. Well, what we find in the book of 1 Corinthians is that Paul gives some really important principles of the corporate worship assembly. He shows us in 1 Corinthians 11 that you cannot take something in ordinary life and necessarily make it a part of worship, because the Corinthians were taking their common, ordinary, everyday meal and they brought it to worship and made it a part of the worship. And Paul gets on to these people and tells them not to do that. He says, don't bring your common meal into the worship. Now, that shows us, folks, once and for all, the principle that ordinary life and worship are different. But when we get to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, we find that Paul addresses something else that is very common, and that is the kind of chaos and pandemonium that oftentimes exist in churches today. There are a lot of churches today that have what they call contemporary worship, and the atmosphere in their so-called worship is more like a rock concert, it's more like a ball game, or it's more like a movie theater than it is reverent, respectful worship to God. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, Paul is dealing with a situation, a problem at Corinth, that does reflect on this question that we're looking at. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, Paul says to the church at Corinth that they are to edify each other when they come together for worship. You see, at the church at Corinth, there were many people that were able to speak in tongues. There were many people that had the gift of prophecy and the gift of interpretation. And Paul says, when you use these spiritual gifts, you are to do so in order. You are to edify each other with these gifts. And he says, if the other people in the assembly cannot even understand what you're saying, You're not helping them. You're not doing them any good. And the problem was this. The tongue speakers, especially at the church at Corinth, were speaking out of turn. Several of them were trying to speak at the same time. Some of them would get up to speak when there was no interpreter there, and there would be some people in the audience that wouldn't understand a single word of what they said. Now, Paul got on to them about that. Paul said that you're not to speak in that kind of way. You're not to try to speak two or three or four or five or six at the same time, because that's very confusing. Nobody can understand a situation like that. And so he sets forth these principles in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, beginning in verse 23. That's where he said, if you do this, what you all have been practicing in trying to talk over each other in the worship assembly, and somebody comes in that is an unbeliever that doesn't understand, they're going to think that you're crazy. That's verse 23. And then in verse 26, he again rebukes them. He says, how is it then, brethren, when you come together, every one of you has a psalm, every one of you has a doctrine, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation. Now, he's not saying that they were wrong because they had a psalm or a doctrine or a tongue. What he's saying is they were wrong because they were trying to talk over each other and they were creating confusion. So his exhortation is this: let all things be done unto edifying. Build each other up. And the way to build each other up and edify each other is to be respectful. And in essence, what we find here in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 is that Paul tells these people, while somebody else is speaking, you need to be quiet. So let's notice what he says in verse 27. If any man speak in an unknown tongue, let it be by two, or at the most by three, and that by course, and let one interpret. So Paul says, all right, you've come together in the worship assembly. Let two or three of the tongue speakers speak. Let them address the audience. And let them speak by course. That is, one right after the other. Not all three at the same time, much less six or a dozen of you speaking at the same time. Let each one speak in turn. And let one interpret. So that if there are those there that don't understand the language of that tongue speaker, that can be interpreted into his language. In verse 28, but if there be no interpreter, let him keep silence in the church, and let him speak to himself and to God. Here Paul says that the tongue speaker was to be quiet. He was to be silent. He was not to say anything if there was no interpreter. Why? Because even though he's getting up and he's speaking in this language that the gift of tongues gave him the ability to speak, if the people there do not understand what he's saying, then it's not going to do them any good. So here's a man who's getting up and speaking in tongues. If the church is not edified, if the church does not understand him, then that man is to be quiet. Now let's apply that to some of the things that we've talked about. If people are shouting, if people are yelling, if people are screaming and hollering in a church assembly, let me ask you, what did the people who hear that learn? What are you teaching people? You see, you can't teach people how to live the Christian life by hollering. You can't teach people how to be saved if you've got non-Christians there by yelling and screaming. You cannot edify the church by doing these kinds of things. If even the tongue speakers were told to be quiet in the first century, then that would certainly apply to these kinds of things today. Now notice what he says in verse 29. Let the prophets speak two or three, and let the other judge. And if anything be revealed to another, that is another prophet that sits by, that is there, he says, let the first hold his peace. He's not to keep on speaking. If something is revealed to one of those other prophets, then let him speak. So what is he saying again here? Speak in turn. Because if you're up speaking at the same time and you're just talking over each other, you're making a lot of racket, you're making a lot of sounds and a lot of noise, but you're not edifying. Because if you want to edify the church, you need to speak words that people can understand. You see, God doesn't tell us just to come together to make a bunch of sounds. Even in our singing, you see, this is the point about singing as opposed to making music. The Bible says that we are to teach and admonish one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. That means that when we sing, we are to teach, and we are to teach in words. Well, it's even more so true of these people that he's talking about here who were speaking to the assembly. Now remember, this is a church assembly that he's talking about here. This is where the congregation has come together for worship. And these men are supposed to be speaking to and teaching and edifying the whole congregation. But what's happening is that they're speaking out of turn and they're creating confusion. And Paul is straightening them out about that. So he says to the tongue speakers, you can speak, but you speak one at a time. You speak in turn. And he says to the prophets, yes, you can speak, but one man at a time. That is, you speak by course, you speak in turn, and you respect each other in that kind of order. Now notice what Paul says in verse 33. The reason why he's saying all this is, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Paul said the reason that you come together is not to try to make some big commotion and call it worship. You're not to have a rock concert. Worship to God is not to be like a celebration that you have when your favorite ball team wins the game. Now, there is to be joy. There is to be excitement in our hearts. We're to put our feelings into it. There's no question about that. But we're to do it in the manner, we're to do it with the attitude and with the respect that God says we're to have. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 33, the Bible shows that God is not the one who wants this kind of chaos and pandemonium and confusion in worship. And that's what it causes. He says, but God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Now, skip on down to verse 40, because here's where he concludes with a statement about worship that we need to remember. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 40, Paul said, let all things be done decently and in order. The word decently there means in a seemly manner. In other words, in a way that's fitting. So when we think about coming before God, the Creator, we're not coming before a man who's entertaining us. We're not watching a television show. We're not watching a movie. We're not hearing some politician speak. We are coming before the Creator, and there should be reverence and respect in our hearts when we do so. The manner in which we worship God is to be different. He says, let all things be done decently and in order. Now, to do these things in order goes back to what he told these tongue speakers and what he told these prophets, to do these things by course, to take their turn. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, we have two very important passages that set forth two very important principles about worship. And these principles are far different from what goes under the heading of what is called worship many times today.